Good evening. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Leanne and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Leanne.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and have a spa flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus precisely on how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we're going to be discussing step four, and we've broken it into two meetings. So this Monday and next Monday we'll be talking about step four. So step four is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And tonight we have two speakers. We've got Phyllis and Will that are going to be sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us tonight. If y'all help me welcome them. So I'm going to read the first, not the first paragraph. It's all the way down at the bottom on page 63. And then the panel will share for a few minutes on each of the readings as we go through. So tonight on page 63, this is the fourth edition that we're working out of. Next, we launch out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions.
I'm Phyllis, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Phyllis.
And my home group is Fellowship of the Spirit. We have a meeting on Wednesday evenings at 7 and another one at 8, 7 for beginners, 8 o'clock is a big book. On Saturday we have a speaker meeting. Some of you have been there, some of you may yet be there, watch out. And I have a sponsor that I've spoken to in the last week, and I sponsor others. And let's see what else. I feel that, as many of you do, that it's important to be in service, recovery, and unity. So I have service positions as well. Anyway, so it's kind of a long resume, but it seems like folks do that these days. So let's see. Now, we are on step four, and I just want to say really quickly that I was in a home group that was very action-oriented and very recovery-oriented, shall we say, and responsibility was a big thing, all sorts of things like that. But I didn't know anyone in that group who had done the steps exactly the way that we're somewhat doing them here until the Rough Riders rode into town, you might say, with a big book under their arm and started a home group, people from Colorado. And then some folks came to our group, and my sponsor says that doing the steps out of the big book at 13 years of sobriety saved her ex-husband's life, or soon to be ex-husband's life. And she offered it to me, and I was getting ready to leave. I'd been in that home group for 10 years, and I was getting ready to move to another city. No home group like Pacific Group in that city, so a sort of a stranger in a strange land of AA. And having a specific, very well-organized way of working the steps so that I could just sit there with one other person. Didn't have to be a big group. Didn't have to have the razzmatazz and the big city lights and all that. Just me and another alcoholic sitting down going through the book. And I was able to do that, and it was just such an amazing thing. Also very transformative, which maybe I can get into a little bit further. I mean, I kind of became like a, I don't know, like a carnival barker for the big book at certain points, because it's just, you know, so good. Or like, you know, but wait, there's more. You know, like an infomercial for the big book. Come on down. Because it was incredible. So then, course of vigorous action, personal house cleaning, many of us had never attempted, not to the level that we're talking about here in any case. Though our decision, which, what was that decision? That decision was the third step decision, that God's going to be our father, director, and our contractual person, you know, contract law. He's the principal, we're the agent. And so the agent has to do what the principal has set forth in the contract. Well, the contract is all through the big book, and the contract says something like, we're here to get well and carry the message to others and to devote our lives to a life of service rather than selfishness. It's a pretty cool contract, really, when I think about the results. Now, you'll see, I actually have a little inventory with me here. You'll see that that's a daily thing, getting that humility thing going. Anyway, so this decision... Well, and I didn't, like, do this really fast. It says we launched, but I launched, you know, like a little bit at a time, writing slowly. But it felt strenuous. And anyway, so that's what I'm going to say right there. Over to you, Will.
My name's Will Cheney. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 27th, 2009. I have a sponsor. I sponsor other men. And I'm grateful that my dear friend Bob called me to stand in for him tonight. I have a home group, Friends of Bill W. in Suffolk. We meet at noon and 8 on Thursdays. I have a service position in that home group. And I have a service position in the AA service structure in the district. And just to set the table for my arrival at the fourth step, it was my nature when I lived with untreated alcoholism not to have direct conflict with other people. I didn't like, I wasn't a fighter, and I didn't like to argue, but my modus operandi, so to speak, was passive-aggressive behavior. And what that looked like in my life was if I felt that you had wronged me, I was going to bide my time, and when I got you back, you might be scratching your head, not sure if it was me, and if you didn't have any idea it was me, it was even better. I could bask in the glow of that in secret. And living that way, that evolved, all of that evolved out of the pride that came out of the self-centered fear, which was the reason I began drinking in the first place. And I finally suffered enough, and I asked God for help, and he helped me by putting an effective sponsor in my life. And We began working the steps once a week. He would read the big book and share his experience, strength, and hope. And when we knelt together upstairs at the church in my home group and did that third step, I didn't have a particularly moving experience. I didn't understand. I didn't know what turning my will over to God meant. And he simply said afterwards, go to the drugstore and get a notebook and meet me next week. And when we had first sat down, he said, Will, you will come to trust me. And I trusted him right from the get-go. So I had some trepidation about the beginning that four-step, but because I trusted him, I believe I had begun to live in the moment. And that was helping me be willing to do the work, although not quickly. And but they talked, as we began to do this work and read this chapter, and it talked about what had been blocking us. I just had my first glimpses of how blocked I had been in my life, and it had led to severe depression in my life as well as alcoholism. And I was beginning to understand that the liquor was just a symptom in my life. I was very fortunate that I didn't realize it in the moment, but I realized a few months in that I hadn't had the desire to drink since I surrendered and asked God for help. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to turn over to page 64. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure. Being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations.
When I was first doing this, I was talking to various folks and listening to some folks who had had this experience talking on tape. Back then it was tape. And they mentioned a little bit of an expansion on this, and it was helpful to me to think like we're taking some of the kind of heaviness out of this, I am not entirely all of my failures and all that, this is something that I could potentially let go of, and without regret. It's kind of freeing to think that, I don't have to necessarily be stuck as I am, and that I don't know about you, but I wasn't looking forward to thinking about these things. It's kind of painful to even think about them. But this kind of gives me a framework, just think of it like, okay, not, oh, you're just such a horrible, rotten, terrible person and you're just so flawed and everything, but more like, okay, well, what's working and what's not working? And can we let this go? So that was really a revelation to me to kind of take some of that heaviness out of it. To get rid of them promptly without regret, some hope there, kind of a promise. And not fooling myself about values, taking stock honestly, searching out the flaws in the makeup. What's so great about this, and we'll get into that in the next part, is I kind of had a lot of stuff swirling around in me, a lot of emotion, a lot of all kinds of things, and behaviors that I wasn't even aware of, what's deep down going on here, just kind of reacting more than knowing myself. I'm angry, I'm afraid, I'm a lot of fear, a lot of, you know, self-pity, a lot of acting like the victim and feeling like the victim when in fact I could behave pretty poorly towards others. And so just kind of taking it a step at a time and breaking it down, like, okay, well, here's the attitude we're going to take and here's a framework to put it in, and then we'll be looking at these things kind of more specifically. And I'm not saying it was comfortable, but this was just, even this discussion was a big help to me. So anyway, because the last thing I wanted to say was that I was at fault in a lot of situations. I wasn't a very good apologizer. A lot of pride. So anyway, I just wanted to make one other comment about the liquor being a symptom, back in the other paragraph. Big help there, too, to think of what we're really looking at here is to relieve the real problem. Liquor is a symptom of my problem, which is that I have a bodily reaction to alcohol unlike other people, and I have a mind that tells me that it's okay to drink. And the promise in the book is if I will do this process, that my inability to resist or to not, or to even have that compelling need to drink or to go drink, you know, that I can't stop myself from, like being in a meeting, sitting in the meeting, thinking that's all nice what you're saying, but I'm going to go drink, that there is a thing that I can do so that that doesn't control me anymore. And so a big promise there, liquor was a symptom, and then we're going to get down into the thing here so that we don't have to go back to that. Anyway, I pass.
When my sponsor read this paragraph to me as we worked the steps, the hair stood up on my neck, because back in the early 90s, I was working for a company that didn't take inventory. And I felt justified in stealing from them because my paychecks were bouncing, and my expense checks were in arrears, and my wonderful wife had her pom-poms out cheering me on saying, "How much did we get today?" And I went, "Oh my God, they're talking about Dave and Sam and Glenn." And I'm peeking over at the columns going, "Oh my goodness, I'm going to have to put their names down." I had become a partner in this business by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did have some trepidation that this could be the end of my career if I put those names on the paper. And I'm maybe jumping ahead a little bit by talking about the names in the columns, but it was quite an experience for me, as my pen hovered over my notebook, my hand shaking before I put ink to paper and put those names down. And what I kept having resound through my head was that we had to be fearless and thorough. And I believe I was as fearless and thorough as I could be in that moment. And it was time to begin to put the trust God part that my sponsor had been telling me about into action. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, on page 64, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with?
Okay, here we go. I actually wrote some inventory today. they mention, so let's see, just commenting on this first part here, some more very promisey stuff here about straightening out in all these areas, straightening out spiritually and everything that's coming along, you know. What really has revealed a higher power to me over and over again is watching what happens with other people when they do this stuff, you know. And those of you that have sponsored folks or you've been friends with people, you've talked to folks, you know, people will come in and say, you know, I've got to get my kids back, you know, or whatever, fill in the blank, spouse, job, something. And we hope that they do kind of get the notion here that, you know, you kind of do this thing over here, this spiritual thing over here, and then stuff kind of happens over here almost like magic. You're not directly necessarily acting on it, but you change and it changes. And so it's magic, you know, pretty good stuff. Never on our timeline, though, usually. almost never. And then that's part of the lesson, too. Okay, so the spiritual malady. Lots of things about me that I don't like to admit, for example. Like back to the victim thing. You know, I can relate, Will, on that. You know, I wasn't necessarily going to say stuff outright, but did things. I'll just say my mother was my number one resentment when I did this. 10 years sober, and I had a resentment that I had nursed for my practically whole conscious life. Especially after my brother was born, I think. You know, like, there was competition. There was my sister, who is arguably more worldly successful than me, and very smart, and I love her, and, you know, we're in great condition. And anyway, so I had decided that it's just so sad, you know, you see the little violin here. My mother didn't love me as much as the other ones. So I had to do sneaky stuff. So my sneaky stuff would be, I just won't call you for a long time, and then you'll have to call me to find out if I'm still alive. You know, just little crappy, terrible stuff. And, you know, I was deserving of some shame because, you know, the other people in the family are just these normal kind of like middle class people doing their middle class life and, you know, having nice, you know, doing nice things and being nice people. And I have to explain why this letter comes that says that the car that I had been loaned to me, that was my grandfather's car that they gave me when he passed away, why that had been involved in an investigation. Where I was being followed because of the people I was with. I had to explain to my mom. Of course, I wasn't telling her the exact truth about that, but, you know, so I kind of, when I was home, I didn't want to be there a lot or a long time because that wasn't what I was doing. I wasn't doing what they were doing. I felt bad that I couldn't do it, kind of, but I also didn't want to because I just wanted to drink. Just wanted to get out of there and drink and be with my party people. So, anyway, so... And of course, then that looks like she doesn't love me enough, you know. Not like there's anything wrong with me, not doing anything. So I'll talk a little bit more about what became of that, but just the fact of having that awareness of being able to put it down, you know, it affects, you know, all the stuff. I mean, I'm sure it affected every single thing. And, I'll talk a little bit more when we get further on here about what happened with that. But anyway, so that was a person, and that one was on the top of the list. I talk to my mom quite a lot now. We're peas and carrots, but again, I'll get a little more specific. Anyway, so now we've got these things we're going to put down. We're going to put people, institutions, and principles. I think my first inventory was probably more people than anything else. There were some institutions, I mean, you know, the obvious ones like police and IRS and things like that. principles. I don't even remember so much that in my first time, but today I actually wrote a couple of principles down, and some interesting thoughts about that came up. You know, they might be fears in another iteration, but I think I can be kind of angry around them too. So anyway, here's a couple of them. I put down equanimity. In other words, just not being either really down or angry. You know, like sometimes it's just too hard to do what it says in the book, you know, to just like pause and all that, you know. I got a feeling you're going to know it, you know, because by George, I'm right. Anyway, so, and then let's see, group mindedness. Once I get a notion, and then here's the cause. Once I get a notion to prove a point, I tell myself I can't help myself, and I really don't want to stop. You know, it's like I don't want to help myself. I know the answer. You know, like that kid in the back, teacher, I know the answer. Or, you know, like you're in my way because this thing is happening. You know, like the next one is like institution. Some of the companies I deal with, I need an answer, and I need it now. And I need it to be right. And if it isn't right, then, you know, you person on the phone who doesn't have any power whatsoever over what you know or what you don't know or what this institution is doing and why and all that, you're going to hear it from me. You know, like, that's Phyllis on a good day in terms of, you know, like, a good day of, dang it, injustice, you know, I'm going to take care of it. And I'm ashamed to say that I've had some days like that recently. So anyway, I, you know, so what's going on? You know, my world, I've got fears. Things are having to change in my world. You know, I got fear that I'm nothing if I don't have the right answers for people, you know. So if you can't give me the right answer that I need to give this person, they might reject me, you know, or I might look bad, or, you know, I just don't want to take the time to look it up myself. Why don't you know? You know, all that kind of thing. Anyway, so it affects my security, my pride, my ambition. You know, I wanna be perfect. I want you to be perfect. Don't like to look bad. Don't like to, you know, have to take too much time to do stuff. Anyway, so let's see. So why? Again, you know, I'm just full of all these, you know, like what I need. I need things to be right for me to feel okay. So when I write these things, some folks said you could say why if you wanted to, you know, why my pride's affected or how my pride's affected, you know, but don't worry about that if you're doing this the first time, if that seems a little complicated, because it'll come out anyway in the rest of what you're writing, you know, it seems to. But it helps me as far as looking at the ego piece if I do that. So, anyway, go ahead.
Back in the year 2000, as I turned 50, I had everything in life I could possibly, I'd ever wish for. And I fell into I fell apart and went into a black hole of deep depression for 2 years. I pretty much went to bed for 2 years. And I just was paralyzed with fear, wishing I would die. This is 9 years before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I saw a psychiatrist during this time, and God love her, she did her best to help me. But she never once said, "Will, you suffer from a spiritual malady that distorts your thinking and causes your emotional state to swing between euphoria and the abyss." I wouldn't have known what to do with it if she'd have said it. But I now can see that I've become unblocked, that it's because I did not have a personal relationship with the God of my understanding. I didn't have a chance until I asked for help 9 years later. And this process began of unblocking. This is where the unblocking began. And I had no idea when I read this, you know, about any, you know, it took me some time to consider where my self-esteem and my pocketbook, my personal relationships, including sex, were hurt and threatened. I'd never considered any of this. And so that's why my fourth step took some time, because I was praying and reflecting and pondering, and I really, most of my anger when I got here, I wasn't angry with anyone else. I was beaten, and I knew that at the root of it all that I brought this on myself. I made my world come crashing down. Nobody else. And oh my God, the shunning. My third wife and I, we lived 4 hours apart, and we'd get in shunning contests. And it was amazing when one would finally call the other. Thank you.
Okay, we're on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were quite often wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us, and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived.
Okay. The first time that I did this, I was so excited about it, and I didn't want to do anything wrong. It was so unfamiliar that my mind just kept, just like learning anything, you know, my mind kept trying to grasp, you know, like, I want to be able to talk about this like these people that I hear on tape, you know, and I can't. So I was a bit afraid that, and I was trying to find like the one, you know, absolute in it. You know, it seemed like finding an absolute was good. And I have since relaxed from that a whole bunch, because that just sort of puts me separate from other people. Because then, you know, if I don't quite like how you do it, then there's, you know, like I got to kind of distance you a little or whatever. And I don't have to do that now. But at any rate, I had some fear about doing it, but folks said, just, you know, sit down, put pen to paper, pray before you do it, and then just keep writing, you know, like make a list of the people. Just let it flow out of the pen. And, you know, like, it was a surprise to me, like when my mom appeared at the top of the list, whoa, there she is. And so that helped, just to kind of, like, let go to that extent, you know, just let that be there. And then just keep going until it felt like I was done on that. And then I'm trying to think, did I have, you know, over the years, I've talked to some folks that have had things happen to them, or they had resentments about things that, you know, the fault for them was not that they in some way created that thing happening necessarily, but that today they dragged it around like their bag of pain and reacted to it now, not necessarily that, you know, like if you're an abused child, that's not your fault. You are not, you know, like, but if you're living in that now and not able to get beyond it, and then, you know, never mind the sort of medical or physical aspects, but in terms of the emotions and the resentment, that it helped me to think of it like that, you know, like it's what I'm doing now. Now, granted, it's also in many instances what I did then, but for some things, it's how I'm doing it now. So anyway, conclude others were wrong. This is not the place, well, it kind of is, actually. It doesn't say it right here. The thing about setting aside, does it say setting aside? Anyway, it's 100% thing. It's not about, like, comparative liability. You know, it's not like who's sort of more wrong than me or the other person, and I can kind of feel justified by, well, it's half them, or it's, you know, it's like I'm supposed to look at entirely me, set aside them, entirely me. And I find that very helpful. So let's see, what else I want to say about that? I think that's it. Over to you.
When I saw that word remorse, and I saw that phrase in the big book, worry, remorse, and morbid reflection, I said, oh my gosh, how do they know? That's all I do. That's all I did when I was in that depression. And over-anticipate the future. And never got me anywhere. And you know, when I got to AA, when I got to the fourth step, like I said, I was sore with myself. Why did I have to drink so much? Now, at the end of my drinking, 2 weeks before I came to AA, I still cringe a little bit. I don't regret it, but I cringe that I went to my 40th high school reunion, and I got a suite at the Marriott Courtyard in Richmond, and was drinking myself to death, and I didn't even know it. I thought I was having fun. And some of my friends told me later, Will, we thought you were going to die in that. I had decorated with lights and I was having people over. Yeah, baby, let's roll. And I hope none of it ended up on YouTube at the high school reunion. I'm sure I made quite a spectacle of myself. But in any event, I believe when I surrendered, I had ceased fighting everyone and everything. And I still get annoyed, I still get disturbed, but I wasn't fighting. I was reluctant to do some of the things that I was guided to do, but I always ended up doing them. And that served me well. And but this whole thing about I always perceived that I was being wronged, and I knew I was right, and I had no idea where that came from. And I gotta just jump ahead and steal from the end of my fifth step that it came out of my pride. My sponsor pointed that out to me. And I just had an inkling of what he was talking about in that moment, but I knew we were on the right track. Thank you.
Okay, on page 66, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal, for when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison.
Okay, this paragraph is like, think of the years and years and years of shutting out the sunlight of the spirit. You know, like I lived in my head, I lived in my pain, I lived in my, you know, all of the things I didn't even understand what it was. I just knew I kind of had this ball of pain in me, not appreciating what was happening right now, worried about tomorrow, being ashamed of stuff that happened. You know, I always thought everybody was as drunk as I was, wherever I was, but that really wasn't true. I went to some events where people were drinking and I was sober, and I realized most of the people here act pretty, you know, normal. There's a few that kind of stick out, and I think, oh, that was probably me a lot of the time. Although I tried to have some pretty wild drinkers around me. So, but still, I'm sure there were those people there that were kind of, And, you know, the ones that you could call and rely on to tell you what you did, you know, like, didn't go into the blackout. Clearly they were observing what was going on. And sometimes, occasionally commenting to me about my behavior, which I took great offense at, that they had the nerve to tell me that I should or should not be doing this or that thing. You know, like, of course you can't just sit there. You know, one of my things I wrote down as a principle was taking constructive criticism. You know, who likes that? I resent that deeply. In fact, I have a series of reviews from previous employers, and you know the common thread in each one? Seems to take constructive criticism hard. Does not react well. Oh my goodness. But you know, if I am relying on my fragile ego and image of myself as being perfect to just hold it together, you know, and I'm not relying on a higher power, then of course I can't take it. You know, if you see any fault in me, then I'm revealed. You know, you see through me, I'm history. I'm destroyed. So anyway, I've got to rely on something else besides my ability to construct my image to you that I have to hold up to protect me. Anyway, so I have this kind of thought about how this was helpful to me in the beginning. Was like, whew, you know, the first time I did it, like it's almost like holding up a mirror to the back of your head that I could never see before. You know, it's like seeing stuff I could never see in a way that I could never see it. And fortunately, we have the framework here and the support here to have a little bit of safety while doing that. That kept being emphasized to me. You know, you know, if you're praying and you're, you know, doing all the things that we suggest and you're with people you trust, just, you know that it's going to be okay. It's going to be all uncomfortable, but it's going to be all right. And that was a big help. Grave condition in a hospital means the person isn't going to live, probably. You know, they have, like, something, and then it's critical, and then it's grave. I think it's serious, critical, grave, and then there's some else called fear or something like that, you know, like where you hear all these stories on the. Anyway, so grave means, like it says here, can be fatal. But the sunlight of the spirit, what an image. Insanity of alcohol can return, and to drink is to die. So do we need to do this? I guess so. To be free of anger. Now, I would say freedom from anger doesn't necessarily mean I don't experience it, but it means that I don't have to do the stuff I did when I had it, you know. Sometimes anger actually can reveal something that you need to clear up with people, but my way is, you know, oftentimes not to have an adult conversation. It's something else. It's either attack or silent attack. Anyway, let's see. Anything else we need to say about that? So the principle of equanimity, you know, not liking, you know, like there's a part of me that likes to cling to character defects because they're what I know. You know, like, you know, that old advice about be yourself. Oh my goodness. Looking at this, it's like, please let me be someone else. But, you know, in my natural state, my ego is there and it just wants, you know, like I want to be free to be me, and that means look out. Anyway, so we people around me are lucky from all of this. All right, I pass.
The night I met my third wife, it was probably three years before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. We got drunk and danced to Prince into the wee hours. And I informed her that night that I was a drunk and a drug addict and I didn't need to be anybody's stepfather because she had two kids. And I'm not a drug addict, I just was embellishing. And I was telling anyone who would listen that I didn't want any entanglements. Of course, 3 months later, I asked her to marry me because the physical aspect of the relationship was everything I'd ever wanted. And when things went south and we went into that shunning, I can remember late at night being, she lived 4 hours from me. We weren't even in the same city and we were married. And listening to Boss Skaggs sing, "You've gone and lost the best thing you ever had." I was so good to that woman, and I gave her money and took her to New York City and stayed at the best hotels, and she's going to treat me like this, you know, that perception that I was being wronged. And boy, can I see now what a luxury it is to have anger and resentment in my life that I can ill afford. And the last time I truly remember being angry was 3 days after my spiritual awakening. It was still in my first year, and I got into a road rage incident. And a few seconds in, I recognized the old will coming out, and I backed off, and later on, I called my sponsor and talked about it, and he said, "Well, sounds like you got some more work to do there, Will." And I'd just done my first amends. I was just on the ninth step. And that's not to say I don't get disturbed or experience turmoil or see a little bit of red when in service with other alcoholics. Of course we're going to see a little red. But I'd like to say today I can see the seeds of resentment blowing in the wind, and I have the steps to help me before they can land and take root. I didn't do a four-step today, but I've done one recently. I wasn't angry or resentful. I want to be as cautious as I can be with this work. I don't want it to become a full-blown resentment that might cause me to drink and die. I love this solution. This solution and carrying the message to the alcoholic brings me the greatest joy I've ever experienced in my life. Not only that, I'm fulfilling my purpose for being put on this earth. I am neutral on alcohol today. I am neutral when I'm around it. I don't unnecessarily put myself around it, but I can be around it when it's necessary. And I know that it will be poisonous for me if I take another drink. And this sense of neutrality is a very freeing aspect of my recovery. Thank you.
On page 66, you turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance at being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one.
These little paragraphs are life-changing. They're just plain old life-changing. sometimes when I've been sponsoring folks, they've done their, you know, here's my stuff, like here's what they did and here's how it affected me and all that. That didn't relieve that feeling of anger necessarily. But this part really is huge. Prepared to look at the list from an entirely different angle. We began to see the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, wrongdoing of others, fancied or real. So sometimes it was real, and so that's can be a little more difficult journey in a way for someone to let that go. And of course, it has the power to kill because I live in my head. I know what I think, and I know what's right, and I know what you're thinking, and I know what you're doing, and you know, I know. And I have to laugh sometimes because even now, you know, something will happen, and I'll interpret it, and then sometimes I behave on that interpretation, and it's not true. And sometimes there's little things, but sometimes it's bigger stuff, and I realize, wow, you know, I could live my whole life like that. You know, like, I mean, I have made decisions about should I go back to college or not, should I think about this career or not, you know, go check out a couple of things, get a resentment over what I saw, and then say, well, never mind. You know, I mean, wow, that's frightening. You know, and the important thing here is that whatever that does to a person's life, we don't have to do that anymore. Isn't that amazing? You know, it's just so cool. I mean, the freedom that's possible here. It's amazing. But this fancy, you know, that's really can be fun if you start to get to laugh about it. You know, like what are all these things that I thought were going on? I'll tell you a quick one. When we moved to Ohio from California, I went to some day meetings. I didn't have a job yet. And I actually went to some Al-Anon meetings, too. I had decided that my husband should go, and he wouldn't, so I thought, well, then I'll go. And okay. So I'm in Al-Anon, and I see this woman across the room, and she was just so perfect. She had that, who's that skater that had that hair that was just like, you know, just this perfect kind of like short bob.
Dorothy Hamill.
Yeah, Dorothy. She had Dorothy red, beautiful red Dorothy Hamill hair. She had on these perfectly creased jeans, and she had on Bass Legion loafers. And I thought, her husband's a lawyer. She doesn't have to work. I hate her. Just all passes through my mind. You know, a month or so later, I was at the AA meeting that I frequented, and somehow we got to talking. She heard me talk or something. I don't know. We got to talking. She decided she wanted to get sober. She wanted me to be her sponsor, and her husband was a crack addict. Okay. So much for my... Anyway. So we went through the book. It was quite amazing. And her life got really great, and she found a really nice guy and got married to a really nice guy, and all kinds of good stuff happened anyway. So, you know, it says in the book, like, you know, you're going to meet people and exciting stuff's going to happen, cool things are going to happen. Sometimes you're not going to think they are at first, but they could be. Anyway, so... the next one, spiritually sick, other people, and I'm the same as them. I'm spiritually sick, they're spiritually sick. So how can I be helpful? You know, I don't know. That's something to pray about. That's a whole like a prayer. That whole paragraph is kind of like a prayer. Help me to do that. And how can I be helpful? And I am going to jump ahead like Will did. What happened here in my situation is my sponsor helped me see. Like this... This is like the place where I turn from that person who is concerned about my feelings and what happens to me and what about me and how can I get this and, you know, what am I not getting, what am I, to my job is to find out where I can be helpful. That's my job now. You know, remember, that's the contract. And so my sponsor pointed out in the resentment with my mom that there were a couple of ways in which some of the people in the family had some judgments about some stuff she was doing. Basically, she was raising the child of my stepsister. And there was some rivalries and jealousy and things. And I was kind of dismissive. You know, I wasn't living there. I didn't know this kid. It was kind of like, why does she think that kid's so important? My sponsor said, how about if you see how much that child means to your mom and support her in, you know, like, doing what she loves with that person? And it was like my heart opened up. Didn't need my mother to do anything, because what I needed was there all along. It was relationship with a higher power that I needed. And once I had that, I had the power to give her. And so we talk every week. Maybe no, we don't, but we talk every week. And that kid, she lives with that kid now. That kid grew up and is a successful person. And my mom's 88, and she lives with her. And I joke with my mom, oh, when you're changing her diapers, you didn't think she would wind up living with her, right? And anytime I get a chance, I tell that kid how much I appreciate her being there for our mom. And, anyway, and that, this, anyway. Go ahead.
Because of the psychic change in my life, because I perceive things differently, I look back and I now see that God put a lot of very sick people in my life, so when the time came, I could do a proper four-step. And the first very sick person that showed up on my list was a man who attempted to molest me when I was 14. And I was struggling with seeing. Well, we had a column in my four-step that said my fault. I was struggling with seeing how I could possibly be at fault. And 2 weeks in, I called my sponsor at the appointed time, and he said, first thing he says, hey, come over that four-step. Well, I'm working on it. That means you're not doing anything. Well, that's pretty insightful. And when I do these impressions, it's just, you know, an exaggeration of how it went in my head. And then I asked a day later I thought was a stupid question. It turns out it's probably one of the best questions I've ever asked. And I asked about percentages of fault in any situation. And he very just matter-of-factly said, well, it was all your fault. And the light bulb came on. And I saw where my own selfishness and self-centeredness had led me to be around that man, because he had a red Corvette convertible that he was teaching me to drive. And I could hear the alarms going off. I could see the red flags. And I kept pursuing it. It was so cool, and I wanted it so bad. And I was able to go ahead and do that. Resentment and all the others just kind of flowed from there. And when I got to AA, I was a very sick man. I like to say today I'm probably a little bit sick in a lot of areas. But I've been restored to sanity, and I believe God in His grace has healed me. I must stay in this solution to remain healed. Thank you.
Thank you. We had one more paragraph. I'll just read it. It says, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrong others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly, and we're willing to set these matters straight. And next week, we'll continue on with the other parts of step four. We'll be talking about fear and sex or conduct. I get that me, I'm happy about that. It's not just sex. It's about, for me, my conduct in life. So we'll be continuing on with those next week. At this time, we're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Hi, I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Grant.
My home group, North Suffolk Big Book, Tuesday night, 7 p.m. in Suffolk, 1885 Bridge Road. We're having a speaker tomorrow night, Paul Bickford from Colorado. Should be a good message. So come out. Please pick something up good and new. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, I've got one up here that was passed to me, the 14th Annual New Day Group Picnic. It's Sunday, September 18th from 9 to 5 at Woodstock Park, Providence Road, Virginia Beach. We're going to have music, food, and games. Bring a covered dish if you wish. And I'll put the flyer up here over on our literature table. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, if you'll raise your hand, just see one of us after the meeting. If you have any questions, what our home group is, or if you'd like to join. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce themselves? Just give us your first name. Just raise your hand. In the back?
Hey, Michelle,
welcome. Anybody else? Okay, our literature table is over here. If you'd like to purchase any literature, which books have a cost inside the front jacket, just see me after the meeting. Pamphlets and anything you can fold are for free. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you're willing to be a sponsor, will you please raise your hand? If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, just see me after the meeting. I'll be up here at the table with our two speakers. And please feel free to thank our speakers and talk to them after the meeting if you have some time. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. If you'll help me thank Phyllis and Willigan. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol. It's on 22nd and Colonial, right up the street here. And do I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on 164? Aaliyah?
John.
164?
Our book is meant to be suggested only if we realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the records of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. Okay. After the meeting, these chairs we have to put up on two rollers that are over here and put them away. So if anybody would like to help us, that would be great. And we'll close with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory,